Back in session after a nice lunch. We're on agenda item number 7, hunting restrictions and equipment. This is a briefing and public hearing. Brock Haynes, please.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. Welcome back. My presentation pulled up. Can you see it?
Not yet.
Not indicating.
There you go.
There, now it's indicating. Okay. All right. So moving into hunting restrictions and equipment. So we've got 5 WACs that we'll cover: general hunting restrictions, hunting equipment restrictions, and then equipment restrictions for muzzleloaders, archery, and crossbow. Cover the general restrictions first, and then go through muzzleloader, then archery, and then crossbow, and then we'll have some time at the end for some questions. So starting with hunting restrictions, we made a small change to the language. It didn't change the intent of the rule. We were just trying to clarify that it's unlawful to hunt wild animals except rabbits and hares with dogs during the month of October or November, during dates established for modern firearm, deer, and elk general seasons. The second proposal in this WAC is allow the use of one dog controlled by leash during lawful hunting hours within 72 hours of shooting a big game animal, except bear and cougar, to track wounded big game and aid in recovery. So we had approximately 1,500 respondents to our online survey. 78% indicated support, and we only had 11% disagreement. We received 143 comments, all came from our online survey. Most of them were either expressing just general agreement or disagreement. We did have some, however, there was 33 folks that indicated they wanted to retain the current rule to allow night hunting with dogs. So there was confusion. They thought that we were, you know, disallowing the use of dogs for night hunting, for like raccoon hunting. So they were just simply confused about what we were attempting to do. We had comments that felt like we shouldn't allow the use of dogs in general. Some folks wanted to expand the tracking to include all game species, and not just the ungulate species, but there's clear reasons why we would never allow the use of a dog to assist with the recovery of, you know, somebody that might be cougar hunting or bear hunting. And then we had some respondents that were advocating for a ban on all night hunting. So hunting equipment restrictions in this proposal, we modified the language to clarify that it's unlawful to hunt all big game with the aid of infrared night vision equipment or with laser sights, and not just deer and elk. In addition to this WAC, there's also a RCW that makes it illegal to use this equipment for all big game. And this just aligns the language with our rule to match up with what's already established in RCW. We had 1,500 respondents to our online survey, 75% indicated support and only 12% disagreement. We had 49 comments, all were received through our online survey. Most were just expressing general agreement or disagreement. We had 8 comments that were expressing concern about predator populations and the effects on ungulate herds. We had 5 comments that thought we should allow the use of night vision equipment in specific situations. And we actually do have the authority to do that. There have been some instances, for example, where we've issued a special permit in response to a damage issue that would allow someone to use this equipment at night. And then the last comments were related to expanding to include all game species and not just big game. So moving into muzzle-loading firearms, we had 3 proposals. One was to allow the use of scopes that do not exceed 1 power magnification. This would include red dot and other similar electronically powered scopes. In addition to red dot, there's green dot, there's blue dot, there's hologram, So we provided this general language to make sure that we captured all of those. As long as they don't magnify the target, they would be legal to use. We added language that clarifies the term load refers to the powder charge and projectile, and that both must be loaded from the muzzle. This actually came up last year. There has been development in muzzleloader technologies, and we started getting requests from hunters. There's new technology that is a breech action muzzleloader, and the projectile is loaded from the muzzle, but the charge is loaded from the breech. And so we were getting requests from hunters as to, can I use this type of muzzleloader or not? So this just clarifies that that type of muzzleloader is not legal in Washington. And then the last one was to allow video cameras to be mounted to the firearm. Again, approximately 1,500 respondents to our online survey, 68% indicated support, 23% opposition. The comments we received 218 comments from the online survey, and then we also received 5 emails or letters, written communications related to this proposal. The vast majority of the comments were general in nature. They didn't specify why. They just indicated general agreement or disagreement.
Commissioner McIsaac has his hand up, Brock.
Yep, I see that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. a question about the scope situation and then a question about the video cameras. So on the matter of the scope, so you've got your online survey that's, I presume that's some sort of a random survey of folks to try to gauge what a random selection of people think. Please correct me about that because I'm just guessing if that's what it is. And then on your public comment, people that came in and were specifically saying something. So on the public comment, 66 agree, 123 disagree. It's not clear to me if they're disagreeing with number 1, 2, or 3 on that. And also, I guess on the other one, is this for scopes? Is this for number 2? Is this for number 3? I'll just throw out my other question on allowing video cameras to be mounted to the firearm. Is it true that right now you cannot do that or that you can do that?
So I'm going to take the easy one first. So the video cameras right now, the way the rule is written, it says you can't have any electronic devices, you know, connected to your firearm. So they wouldn't be allowed right now as the rule is written. So to your first question, so when we file the 102 and we put it out for public review, it gets posted online. And each WAC, every proposal that's within one WAC gets voted on, like as one WAC, not by each individual topic. So we put it out for public review. The first thing, the option that the respondent has is to indicate whether they agree, whether they are neutral, or whether they disagree. And they're going to select one of those options. And then they can opt to leave a comment. So these three proposals, there were not three individual votings that occurred. They had to vote first on whether or not they agreed with the WAC. Then they have the option to leave a comment. And so you're exactly right. When they only leave a comment that says, I agree or disagree, I generally disagree, and they don't specify whether it's proposal 1, 2, or 3, I have no way to decipher, you know, which one of those they're commenting on, unless they specifically say, I agree with allowing the, you know, video cameras to be mounted, but I disagree with the use of scope. And if they don't provide that specificity, then I just have to, you know, bin them as a general comment expressing support or opposition.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. We have a couple more questions here. Commissioner Smith, then Commissioner Kuntz.
Well, I'm still confused, maybe because I didn't attempt to take the survey myself. which might have explained this, but so are you saying then, Brock, that 68% of the respondents simply gave a thumbs up and it was just okay? And then there were 218 comments in addition to people, or maybe the same people, that gave thumbs up or thumbs down. And so then of those that bothered to comment, then 123 actually disagreed. So how do you weigh that against, I mean, to me, it seems like people that actually bothered to comment, that ought to receive somehow more weight than if they were just doing thumbs up, thumbs down. But it doesn't look like it works that way.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
On this specific one, we had 1,549 respondents that voted agree, disagree, or neutral.
Right.
1,549, 218 also chose to leave a comment.
Right.
And this is actually, we received a lot of comment back that expresses the same frustration with the way we gather the public input on, you know, when we're at this point in the process, where we don't get specific input on each individual proposal that's covered in a WAC. They don't, we receive feedback that they don't prefer it that way because they don't know how to vote, or they don't know what to select, because I agree with two and three, but I don't agree with one. And they put that in a comment. And if they don't put it in a comment, I have no way to, you know, decipher that.
And so our option at this point, or when we make the decision, when we have to make the decision, we also are in that same boat, correct? We have to either approve 1, 2, 3 or disapprove 1, 2, 3. We can't pick and choose either as commissioners.
I think we can have a conversation and we can make a modification. I think when it gets to the point of formal adoption, you're right, that occurs at the WAC level. But this is our opportunity to have that, to weigh public input and have that conversation. And we can make an adjustment.
Okay, thank you.
Adoption.
Commissioner Kuntz.
I basically had the same questions as Lorna. And I also, just in general, think it's a big shortcoming of the survey to do it this way. And I also would have that difficulty when these are clumped in this way, because I think you'll find that it's in many cases you'll want to vote, you know, up on a couple and down on one. So anyway, it's the same question as Lorna. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coach.
Can I respond to that real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Chair Carpenter.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, so before we go to this step, we also did a survey in the summertime. And in the summer survey, we do ask for input on each individual proposal. And I have summarized that. We also use those survey results to inform, you know, and summarize our public comment. And in the materials that are in your packet, I did provide, you know, the public feedback that we got during that summer survey where we asked specifically about each proposal.
Okay, thank you.
As it is now, we'll vote on them in these groupings.
Yeah.
Okay. Anish, did you want to say something before we have two other commissioners' hands up?
Yeah, I did want to clarify that the people that do leave a comment usually have some sort of disagreement with one of the, or, you know, have something to say. And so there are 218 of those, but the others wholeheartedly agreed with it, which is almost 700 folks. And so I don't think you should weigh the 218 more than you weigh the 700 that agreed with all of the three of the proposals. So I guess that's the way we look at it, because 700 folks roughly said they agreed with all the WAC changes. And those that didn't agree, that's why we provide a comment field, is they can break it down however they like, and we will look at those as Brock did. And so only, 123 out of whatever, almost 1,600 disagreed. And so I guess look at it in that vein, not in just how many provided comment, because just because someone didn't provide comment doesn't mean their vote should be any less, I guess, worth any less.
Commissioner McIsaac and then Commissioner Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We may want to come back to this after public comment for a little bit of commissioner discussion, but I've been under the presumption that when we make a final decision on this on April 9th, that we would be able to tinker with the language in the WAC. And for example, if there was a motion to adopt number 2, but not number 1 and 3, or how about 1 and 3, but not number 2, that's all an eligible thing, and we'd have a discussion about that. Okay, and I see Anise nodding. Well, my question has to do with the video camera part of it. So in talking with some constituents, there's a concern about the scope having a 1x magnification and whether or not that's going to enhance the ability of the success of the hunter. And I recall what the staff said before about looking at data from other states. My question has to do with video cameras. Sometimes they got amplifiers on them. My iPhone, for example, goes from 1x to 12x. And so I don't know what video camera technology is now, but I'm sure it's much better than whatever I have on my iPhone. So in the world of muzzleloader hunters, if this was to be a yes on number 1, not to exceed 1 power, and yes on number 3 to video cameras that could be cranked to 12 or 15, is that even something that's possible? I guess I would ask it that way.
Yeah, I think with technology today, somebody could come up with something. I imagine there is some technology out there, but we did put in the rule. The actual language that we've proposed says you can use a camera as long as it does not magnify, the image. So the animal that you're trying to shoot at.
Who would like to go first, Commissioner Anderson or Anise?
Well, and I think the language also says that it cannot be used as an aiming device, the camera. Yeah. And so it can't be mounted in a way that you could use it for aim. So that it may be able to magnify, but you can't use it to aim.
Okay. Thank you, Anise. Commissioner Anderson.
It's like using binoculars while you're out there. I mean, you can have binoculars on you, you just can't have it in a position to use for aiming. I guess my question is, based on this conversation, or maybe my suggestion is that this doesn't seem like quite as perfected of an input system as we might want. So just give encouragement to the staff for the next period to maybe consider some ways to get a little bit more fine-tuned, more precise kind of input on the different sub questions in each of the WACs, rather than repeat this this kind of situation where we're getting kind of some muddled information that isn't quite as valuable. So that's all.
Director, did you want to speak?
Yeah, I just want to kind of context setting. And so first, Commissioner Anderson, thank you. And we can certainly look at ways to get better precision or refinement out of these. But I also want to remind folks, and you all know this, so I feel like I'm stating the obvious, but the kind of tone of the conversation encourages me to do that. These are not votes. I've heard the word vote a couple of times. What we want to do is get, in my previous life, we always said all comments are weighed equally. because the purpose of the comment is to make sure we're aware of something and we can make a conscious decision accordingly. So I'd give the example, if one of our changes were to comply with federal law, there's been a change in federal law and we must comply, and it restricted hunters, we'd probably get about a 99% response rate saying, no, don't do that. Well, that's good to know people don't like it, so we can look for alternate avenues or ways to compensate for it. But this is really just soliciting information on the generality so that you have enough in front of you to know what people generally like, generally don't like, and how strong that is, as opposed to actually a precise survey in order to, you know, a precision description of how the public feels. Sorry, I'm starting to ramble, so I'll stop.
Thank you, Director. Brock, do you have more or? Okay, Kyle,
yeah,
just to remind people, we do have a number of people that want to comment on this, and we're, as of now, we're about 40 minutes behind. So I just mentioned that in the spirit of moving along.
Okay, so we'll move on to archery equipment. The four proposals we had here was to allow the use of range-finding bow sights, allow the use of breadcrumb knocks, verifier peep sights, and again, to have video cameras mounted to the archery equipment. We had 1,500 respondents to our online survey, 67% indicated support, 24% opposition, 244 comments. Most were general in nature. Range finding bow sights was the hottest topic. We 58 comments specific to that, allowing the use of those were in opposition. Only 8 agreed. Breadcrumb knocks were broken about 50-50. And then verifier peep sights and video cameras, most comments were in agreement. The major theme of comments that we got that were in opposition were related to this allowing the use of this technology was going against the spirit of, you know, primitive weapon. And then finally, crossbow, and this is just to allow the use of crossbows during established muzzleloader seasons. We were supportive of that proposal because it's considered a lesser weapon than muzzleloader. 1,400 respondents, roughly, 55% indicated agreement, 30% were opposed. We received 94 comments. Most were general in nature. Some comments were advocating for to also allow the use of crossbows during archery, established archery seasons. We're not supportive of that because we don't consider a crossbow a lesser weapon than archery. They're much more efficient. And then some folks expressed opposition to allowing the use of scopes on a crossbow. Most crossbows, if you were to go buy one, they come with a scope that has magnification power. But even with that scope on there, we still consider them to be a lesser weapon than a muzzleloader. So with that, any more questions beyond what we've already covered?
I don't see any, Brock. I do now, Commissioner Smith.
Just a clarification, is the sole purpose then really of mounting these video cameras to capture that moment of the hunt, presumably so they can put a video up on YouTube or something? I mean, what's the purpose of the video camera?
Yeah, so this is something that we hear from hunters. This was a proposal that came from the public. They expressed a desire to be able to film their hunt when they are hunting by themselves. I can't speak to what they plan to do with the video, you know, once they have it or their motivation to put it on social media. I can't speak to that.
Okay, I see two hands up, but I think they're just up. Kelly, did you want to speak again, or is your hand?
I'm sorry, Commissioner. That was a vestigial hand.
All right, thank you for that. Okay, if there are no other comments or questions, Nikki, public comment piece.
All right, we'll now take public comment from registered attendees. As a reminder, everyone receives 3 minutes for comment unless the allotted time is modified by the chair at the onset of the agenda item. Everyone is currently muted. When it is your turn to speak, you will be recognized by your partial phone number or your Zoom username to be unmuted by staff. All right, my first person I have is Martha Hall. Let's see. All right, Martha, you've been unmuted.
Yes, I'm unmuted. I'm having a lot of trouble with the discussion on surveys, and that's exactly what my comments were on, more than on the issue. And so I'm glad that the commission talked about the surveys and public, how public comment is taken and used. I think that the comment system shows how this department, a public agency, needs to do a lot of work to engage the 95 plus percent of the residents who do not choose to hunt, because a look at the comments and what they contain in the proposal show that most of these are from hunters and not the general public, such as the proposal to mount video cameras, which I don't think that would go over very well at all if people think about the ethics and what the point of hunting is all about. And those of us who do not hunt are interested in far different issues than would if we were asked by staff to, we would submit very different proposals to have in this list under hunting restrictions and regulations. Our issues aren't even in the list. And I'll name one of them, and that's the use of bait when hunting deer and elk. This issue is really important for a number of reasons. The first should interest you, because deer and elk bait attracts bears and other animals. It's illegal to hunt bears with bait. The commission failed to address this obvious issue when allowing the use of up to 10 pounds of bait continuously in each bait station. Will the staff and commission address this issue, or is this going to be another one that's going to go to a lawsuit? And the second issue is that many hunters too agree that using bait just doesn't belong in the ethics of hunting. These kind of issues don't appear because we aren't asked by staff. I would also wonder how many non-hunters would support the use of dogs for hunting anything, including hares and rabbits. And I was really surprised to find that this was legal. And again, I would like to mention that non-hunters are very interested in ecosystem management. And I was interested in the Big Tent Committee yesterday, because this is a committee that talked about things that real people can talk about. We don't talk about game animals and fur bears and harvesting wildlife. We're really interested in ecosystems. We're interested in snowshoe hares and climate change and how this pertains to lynx. And this is so different than what you're talking about today. I wish staff would spend more time figuring out how to engage the rest of us who are just as interested in our wildlife. And this wildlife belongs to those of us over 95%.
Are you there, Martha?
I think we lost Martha. Well, let's move on. Maybe she'll call back in, Nikki.
Okay, next we have Mike Hurst. Go ahead, Mike.
Hello, guys. So the cameras on bows or firearms, I support that. One reason, when one of the commissioners was asking, is I have relatives that can't hunt anymore or even fish, and I like to be able to show them some of the hunts we're on. Another one that is pretty important, because I bow hunt a lot, is sometimes when you're bow hunting, a shot happens real quick. And especially during archery elk, you got a bull coming in, make the shot. And a lot of times if you're unsure, you're going to wait. But this would be a little bit of a tool. It doesn't help us harvest the animal. It doesn't give us an advantage. It just helps us make a decision as to where that shot placement was, if I'm going to pull out and wait for that thing to expire because I don't want to keep pushing it. So that'll help with a little bit of decision making in the very beginning after a shot. Like I said, at bow hunt, I am not in favor of range finding sights on bows. Again, I think it takes away from the feeling of the bow. The other thing is, you cannot see a branch at 40 yards that's in your flight path of your arrow. Some of these guys are going to be, hey, man, I was shooting at 100 yards with this Garmin Zero, and I can hit the target. Well, I guarantee you at 100 yards, you're not going to see a branch in your flight path. One, deflect, miss, or two, even worse, hit the elk or deer or bear and wound it and not cover it. I think it's a bad deal. And then the crossbows during archery, I'm not in favor of that at all, because like the they said earlier, it's not a lesser of the archery. And I think it would really put archers at a disadvantage if you got someone out there with a crossbow. Thank you for your time, and you guys are doing good.
Thank you, Mike, for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next is Bob Harriman. Go ahead, Bob. Sorry if I said your last name wrong.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Oh, good. Okay, my name is Bob Harriman. I represent Borderline Bass and Contenders, a hunting and fishing club in Waukamaskatchee Counties. And on this particular situation, our club partly co-authored the one by Power Scopes. And the reason for that was, about 30, 40 years ago, when I was first involved with the commission and decisions, we made changes that the muzzle loaders could not have electronics or have one by power scopes on them. Well, I was a very young age at that time. Now I'm not. And my eyesight isn't as good as it was. And we feel, our club, the intent of Primitive is if you're putting that bullet and powder down the barrel and you're putting the cap on the breech by hand, then you are meeting a primitive weapon. Now, the one power scopes are, no magnification, but I wish we had video so I could show you this personally, but when you're trying to look on an open sight and you got a bead on the front and a two beads or a slash in the back, when you have young eyes, you can see the single bead and you can see the back. But when you have old eyes or astigmatism like I do, you see two beads on the front and you see as many as four beads on the back. That doesn't make it very good when you're trying to make a kill on an animal. Now, there's a lot of people my age now that agree. We didn't know we had discriminated against each other. Now, the other thing that I liked that the department did was they designated what a load is now, and that it's loaded with the projectile and the powder down the barrel and the cap on the breech. That is one of the best things the department could do, because now that stops any further development that would change how that muzzle loader works and loads, which is the primitive part of the gun. So that's our feeling on it. And we're for the one by our scope. And by the way, I was the one that basically told Brock that when we first tried to get one power scopes about 10, 12 years ago, they made a one power scope. They don't make a one power scope anymore since without electronics. So that's why you got to have the electronics. Manufacturers just don't make them anymore. And the other thing that I was wondering about is the video device. Our club was okay with that. And long as the language was in there that you can't use it as an aiming device, we were fine with that. And there's a lot of people that are videoing their fishing and their hunting and all that nowadays. And that's the thing with new technology. Am I getting close?
Yep, you're there.
Yep.
Okay. And I wanted to clarify to the commission a little bit how this went through the whole summer, since about there was individual proposals put out there everywhere.
Bob, you need to wrap up within the next sentence or two, please.
Okay. All right. I felt that they did a pretty good job on their surveys and how they conglomerated them together. So I appreciate being able to opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. Next, Nikki.
Next is supposed to be Bob Dennis, but I don't see Bob Dennis on here. Bob Dennis, if you are on, please raise your hand so I can see that you are here. So you can provide comment. I did just email him too.
Is he the last one, Nikki?
Yeah, and we can just go because he has intentions to comment on like the next several items as well. So,
okay.
He'll pop up later.
All right, commission wrap up as was requested on this item. Commissioner McKaysey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one last question on the scope situation. So, and it gets to whether or not there's any likelihood of an increased take because of allowing for this. And I know what was said before is it was not observed in other states, but it seems a little intuitive that that could be the case. It seems like the scope will enable some early morning and late evening increased visibility compared to a no scope situation. So that's my impression. You guys are the pros from Dover on this. What would you comment on that?
Ultimately, I think it's difficult to predict whether this would result in increased take. What I can say is that if it does, and if it's at a level, right, that now causes a concern about allocation, and we're having too high of a harvest rate in our muzzleloading seasons, then we will address that issue, and we will engage our hunters to figure out how do we address it. Do we want to take the technology back to where it was? Are you willing to accept shorter seasons, different seasons? You know, that's a discussion to come, but we wouldn't just ignore it if it did result in more take.
Good answer. Okay, anyone else? Good presentation, Brock. Take a little break now. We will move on to